Pop culture moment with Jerrica.
Mean Girls, episode 1. Just talk about how mean Regina George is. She is so mean. She looks amazing. Her hair is probably insured for like $1 million. Welcome to the 13th episode of Podcast for Good, the Washington State Combined Fund Drive exclusive podcast channel.
Oh my gosh, that was pretty profesh.
I know, I wrote that.
What's your name?
Speaking of profesh, what are we doing here? My name is Heather Lucas. I'm the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive. And instead of my standard co-host, Philip Kerrigan, today I'm joined by
Jerrica Ferguson. I handle marketing and development for the Washington State Combined Fund Drive. And I'm happy to be here to take his place.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you're here.
Happy to do it anytime.
Yeah?
Yeah, because actually I love doing it.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think he loves it too, but you guys can duke it out.
I think we might have to eventually like have an arm wrestling competition. Yeah.
Oh,
nice. I don't know why I said that, because now he's going to hear it and he's going to be like, yeah. And I'll be like, ooh, I don't know if I could take you.
Yeah. He'll probably be like, yeah, I could win.
Yeah.
I could win.
Maybe we'll go
I'm
left-handed.
Stronger than you.
I'm stronger.
He's than left-handed.
You. Oh, yeah. Wait, no. I might have a chance.
Yeah.
I'll go right-handed. Maybe he has a weak arm.
Yeah. A weak right-handed arm.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll find out.
Philip Kerrigan, weak arm.
Weak arm Kerrigan.
Weak arm Kerrigan. He'd be like, what? That's not a good wrestling name.
Yeah,
it's not a good fighting name.
You know what it reminds me of? I feel like that would be the wrestling name in, what was it, Scary Movie?
Oh, yeah.
Take my strong hand.
Let me start these potatoes.
No, give me your other hand. This is my strongest hand. Oh, this is a good movie. Still in the Halloween mode.
Apparently. I like it, yeah. Well, you know what?
It's fall.
If it works, it works.
It's a fall fave.
It is a fall fave.
Like PSL. PS.
PSL? Gross, dude.
Wait, you don't like that sugary goodness?
Do you have like a mini dog in your purse right now?
Maybe.
If you had a mini dog in your purse, I would be all over that.
Oh my god, now I know.
Yeah, I love mini dogs. Yeah. I love...
Could we just maybe call them puppies?
Sure.
Or do you specifically like toy dogs?
I don't care what they're called. Like, dogs are fun. Especially if I don't have to do any of like the cleaning your poop and any of that.
It's like you're the
if
aunt.
I can just... Yeah, I'm the aunt.
Yeah.
If I can play with your dog...
Yeah.
And, like, be your dog's friend, and your dog wants to be my friend.
Right. We're legit.
Everything is perfect in the world. Perfect
I love that.
And right in the world.
Hey, that's how I feel about babies, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just, it's... like, let me play with this baby,
yeah, like,
and then you take it back when it cries and needs to
exactly.
be changed.
Exactly. Like, on Tuesday, I'm going to go see my niece,
uh-huh.
and she's, like, almost one. She'll be one in December.
Okay.
Exciting.
Nice.
But, like, it's so funny, because I'm like, nope, she's still yours to take care of. I just like to play with her. Because she's cute.
Well, see, and you'll be able to do that thing when she gets a little older where you can, like, take her somewhere.
Yeah,
you can go out and do something with her, but then when she's, like, she needs a nap or, like, if she's sick or something, you're just, like, you could also take a nap with her.
But then I could just give her back.
You could just give her back and be, like, we had a great day at the zoo. We had a great day at Lego World. We had a great day.
Oh, my God, I want to go to Lego World.
Go to Lego World.
I think my brother would be jealous of us. That's okay. Maybe I won't tell him. I'll just go on a, like, secret adventure and be, like, oh, we're going to the bookstore.
And then you go to, like, Lego World, and she comes back, ah, Legos!
I love Legos! Yeah.
Wait a minute, I thought you were doing something at the bookstore. Sorry, sucker.
Sucker.
Mm-hmm.
Coolest aunt ever.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So,
So why are we here?
Why are we here? Let's talk about dogs and nieces and... No, that's not technically why we're here. Technically, today's podcast is about Thanksgiving, giving thanks, and then also in that kind of thing, food insecurity.
Exactly.
Food insecurity is a bigger deal than a lot of people realize, especially if they have food. Like if you get 3 meals a day or you have access to buy 3 meals a day, it's not so much a big problem for you.
Exactly. And I think, you know, everyone at this time of year around Thanksgiving tends to remember this, but this isn't just a food insecurity around the holiday season or when it's cold.
It's a year-round
problem. This is a year-round issue.
Absolutely.
And I think just look at any food bank program, you notice there's summer programs, there's school programs, it's year-round programs. This isn't just it's Thanksgiving, it's time to give back, and people don't go hungry just at Thanksgiving.
Well, yeah, charities, especially Christmas. Food banks, they see that lull when it's like February, March, April, May. They don't get a lot of publicity or a lot of thought in that time of year simply because people think food is a big deal during the holidays and people shouldn't go without during the holidays. people shouldn't go without at all, but it happens. So today we're going to be talking with the director of St. Leo Food Connection. They're out of Pierce County, and his name is Kevin Glacken-Coley. So we'll be talking with him on the phone.
I'm excited.
Yeah. So we do have some kind of stats about food insecurity in Washington. So food insecurity is definitely a problem. Simply, like, it's defined more as a an issue where you don't have access or money to buy food for all three meals that you need to eat throughout the day. Like, that's recommended. Hey, you need your three square meals.
Yeah.
So with the particular charity that we're going to talk to out of Pierce County, food insecurity, there was this hunger fact sheet that was created by congressional districts in 2011. So they did a Gallup poll about food insecurity, food hardship. So the question, have there been times in the last 12 months when you did not have enough money to buy food that you or your family needed? For the former congressional district 6, that included Pierce County, 17.4% of households said yeah.
Wow.
So if you think about like 10 people,
yeah,
be up to two of those would say, yeah, in my household, we didn't have enough money. We didn't have access to food.
Sadly, this just, it isn't surprising to me. I mean, you know this. My family had food insecurity issues when I was growing up. So to see those, it's just, and it's sad. And
it is sad, super sad.
And what's, you know, really sad too is those statistics, if we looked at it for this year, they're about the national average. It's about the same. It's about, you know, 16%.
Yeah, and like you said, food insecurity is not, it's not anything new.
Yeah.
It's something people have to go through all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing research for the podcast today, another thing I found was this really super cool interactive map, and I'll post the link for it so people can check out all over the United States, as well as just in our state.
Yeah.
And it's all broken down by county.
Oh, wow.
So it's super rad, but it's also kind of messed up to think that it's rad because what is it highlighting?
Yeah.
It's highlighting people who don't have enough to eat.
Exactly.
So for the United States, the food insecurity rate in the 2015 data that they had was about 13.4%. So that means that in the entire country, there are 42,238,000 people who are food insecure.
Wow.
Like, we're...
And that's
we're,
the people that they could just, you know, get that survey.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're not asking, like, all the people that are food insecure by any means. Like, you're going to miss a lot of people.
Yeah.
But it is crazy to think, like, we are a really majorly developed nation, and we have these issues where we don't have enough for people to eat.
Yeah.
And it's not just that there's not enough food.
It's an issue because the biggest thing that we're seeing is that you touched right on it. We have the food. We have the food, and it's how do we move that food into these areas, right?
Exactly.
You know,
yeah, and to the people who
actually need them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why food banks matter, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're not hearing about national food banks, right? We talk about these networks of groups that come in and bring food to your local food bank.
Yeah.
And I think realizing, like, when you see an issue in your community about food insecurity, or you know kids at your children's school have food issues, or food insecurity issues, what can you do?
Yeah.
Right? And I think looking towards your own community and looking towards, you know, it doesn't cost a lot of your paycheck to give back. It can be literally $2. It can literally be $5. And I think it can even be less than that, to be honest.
These food banks, too, they make really, really good use of money.
Yes.
Like, as a person who's just access to grocery stores and to restaurants, you have the ability to buy a meal for $5. Mm-hmm. It might not be the best meal nutrition-wise, but you still have the ability to buy food. But for $5, a food bank can stretch that out beyond all belief, and they can get fresh food, they can get some processed food, they can get food to, like, four people instead of just one.
I know that they can really stretch that dollar, and it's always so interesting to me to hear about that, because I'm always like, just the way that they can buy in bulk, and the way that the connections they have with their own local community vendors and nationwide vendors, they can really make a big difference. And I really think if people look at your local food bank, you can really see that impact.
Absolutely. So in Washington State, we talk about some statistics, like it's 1 in 6, 1 in 7, 1 in 8. So in 2016, Northwest Harvest reported that 1 in 8 Washingtonians didn't get enough food to meet their basic nutritional needs.
Wow.
And Washington State is about right in the middle as far as our hunger index. Mm-hmm. So we're 25th. We're the 25th hungriest state.
Wow, we're right in the middle.
Yeah. So they also say that in Washington, the number of people living in poverty significantly decreased over the last year, but nonetheless, 1 in 9 Washingtonians live below the poverty line. And when you live below the poverty line, of course, you can't spend your money on some of those basic things like food. It's more important to spend it on, say, rent, so you don't become homeless.
I think that's the biggest thing, right, is what bill do you pay next?
Yeah.
I mean, how many people play with...
Yeah, they play that game. Do I pay the electricity? Do I pay the gas for the car?
Are we eating this month for food
for the kids? Yeah,
and
exactly.
I think that's the toughest thing, and no one should have to make those decisions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sad that we're still having to have these resources.
And rely on them so heavily.
Yep.
So since the start of the recession in 2008, Washington State has had more than $12 billion, with a B, $12 billion in discretionary spending from our state's operating budget cut from areas in public safety, higher education, and basic needs services. Basic needs services would include food banks.
Wow.
So $12 billion with a B has been missing. And that is also like the SNAP program.
Yeah.
It's called Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Always threatened by budget cuts. Yeah. But half of all people on the SNAP program are kids. So yeah, like
and
if
I,
kids can't eat, then
frustrating.
Yeah,
so
like if kids can't eat, does that mean that they go to school hungry? They don't focus. They can't grow through their learning. And if they don't grow through learning, do they go to college? Do they get a higher paying job? Do they become?
Do they finish school?
Or do they just live in a cycle of poverty?
Right. And gosh, that is
sad.
Awful.
Super sad. So yeah, there are some facts out there and some statistics that are jarring.
They're tough.
And they're tough to take.
They're tough to take. Yeah. Tough to take.
So hopefully it is something that can become less of a problem in the future.
Well, we're going to shine some light on that.
Yeah, we are. So, Jerrica, I'm going to leave the duty of the question of the podcast to you. Would you like to ask me the question of the podcast?
Question of the podcast.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. So with Thanksgiving just around the corner, and it, of course, revolves heavily around food, what food or foods are part of your family's Thanksgiving feast?
So my family is from the Midwest, Illinois and Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Go Bears.
Go Bears.
Yeah, forget those Packers. Da Bears. So we're heavily, my family's food has heavily been a meat, potato, and side vegetable.
What's your meat?
The meat in Thanksgiving has always been turkey for my
family. Some people are ham people.
Yeah, so like my mom is, she mixes it up. So like it would be, when I was younger, it would be ham for Easter.
Mm.
But Thanksgiving and Christmas, those would be turkey times.
Interesting. You do turkey back to back.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So, and like now I'm a vegetarian and I don't eat those things. So like.
So you get the tofurkey this year?
I get something. Uh-huh. But you know, it doesn't really matter for me so much because I dig on the sides. The mashed potatoes, the sweet potatoes, and then scalloped corn is something that has always been in my family.
Oh,
so yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah. Easy, cheap, and you can make a lot of it into a big dish and then eat it for days.
I know, leftovers are the best.
Leftovers are the best.
Yep. Yep.
So how about you? What's your family food?
We are a turkey family.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so this year we're actually going kind of all out. My mom wants to set up like a whole feast with relatives all across like Oregon, Washington.
Oh, so everybody's going to just come to...
Yeah, and this hasn't happened in so long.
Oh, okay.
And so this is a time coming, so my mom wants to do it. And so they're getting turkey and ham. But, of course, 100% the best thing in the world is mashed potatoes.
Dude, that is
like my mom's one job when it comes to like, we're like, don't worry about anything else, mom. Just focus on the
mashed potatoes.
Because that's the most important meal.
Yeah.
some people say breakfast. I say potatoes.
Potatoes are so versatile. We've had this discussion before about the versatility of potatoes.
They're just delicious.
My goodness.
I know. Potatoes are delicious.
I can't handle it.
Can't handle the deliciousness of potato.
Yeah.
So anyway, mashed potatoes, big thing. And then my cousin and aunt have decided, I've decided, which I don't hate it, but
sure,
they are doing a paleo or a keto diet or something, and okay. So they're going to bring cauliflower mash.
Okay.
Not hating on it, because it is actually really delicious, but, like, I'm definitely going to get the potatoes.
You're like, this. I'm going to get this big scoop of potatoes, yeah. And I'll try some of your cauliflower mash.
Yeah, I just want to see if you do a good job.
Yeah.
Judging.
Absolutely.
No, but, no, and then when I, traditionally, though, we used to normally have, like, Swedish meatballs, actually, too.
Oh, yeah?
My great-grandmother is full-blood Swede, and so we would, when she was around, we would go all out, and my great-grandmother would make her Swedish meatballs, and
yeah.
That was kind of that with turkey and kind of thing. So
oh, nice.
This year, I don't think we're going to do it. I've been still pushing my mom for it. But
like, I'm aching like, for the tradition.
I'm aching here. For these Swedish meatballs. But, yeah, so I'm excited for Thanksgiving this year, because we haven't had a real family Thanksgiving in a long time. So.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's nice. You guys get to do that.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, that's always one good thing about Thanksgiving. You get to get together with people you haven't seen in a while.
What is your dessert? Are you an apple pie, cherry pie, pumpkin pie? Are you a pie person when it comes to Thanksgiving?
Sure. Well,
or do you guys have like a pie of choice?
So it is a traditional thing for the pumpkin pie to happen.
Yeah.
As I've gotten older, there've been some like shaking it up in there a little bit. Yeah. So cherry pie is usually a Christmas thing.
Mm-hmm.
I love cherries, like cherries and lemons. Yeah. Those are my favorite fruits right. of all time. So like if there could be cherry pie or lemon pie, any
time. Just combo it.
I can do that.
Put some like lemon like slices on top of your cherry pie.
Yeah, I'll eat that. Absolutely. I'll eat that and not let people eat. Like I'll just like,
I'm like this is mine. It's my pie.
You guys eat the pumpkin. Yeah. But yeah, traditionally it's been pumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
My sister-in-law recently made a sweet potato pie, so my brother's like, this is the kind of pie I think we should make. So there's kind of some like, yeah. Well, you know, maybe
everyone's going to bring that. A pie.
Yeah, there'll be 17 pies. There's no reason.
It's only, you know, an 8-pound turkey, 17 pies.
A whole bag of mashed potatoes. Yeah. What about you, dessert-wise?
Dessert-wise, we definitely will have a pumpkin. Mm-hmm. My uncle always brings apple.
Okay.
I've been informed about that. I think this year my mom and I tested out when I went down to Oregon earlier, was this recipe my great-aunt made, and it's called a Cherry-O pie.
Okay.
And it's cherries, right? And mm-hmm. it's like, you use like condensed milk and like some kind of like cheese, maybe...
Like ricotta or something?
No, it's definitely not ricotta. It kind of tastes like yogurt.
Okay.
So it's like you do like a graham cracker crust, you throw like the yogurt.
Mascarpone.
Maybe, I don't know.
I'm going to go with it.
That sounds way too fancy. We got this stuff at Winco. So we like cover the bottom of the pan, and it's like tastes kind of like yogurt. Cottage cheese, maybe? That's it. Cottage cheese. And like you mix some other things in there, vanilla, etc.
Sure.
Make like a yogurt, you put it in the fridge, cold, and then you put the cherry... The cherry dressing on there on top, and then you serve it cold. So good.
Interesting.
I've had it since I was a kid, and we made it. I was like, yeah, this can make it on the Thanksgiving table.
Yeah. Well, this year, too, like, I had talked about maybe making a cranberry pie.
Mm.
I saw a recipe for it, and I was like, this looks pretty cool.
I love cranberry.
Dude, I do,
too. That is the one thing I think on Thanksgiving people always forget. Like, yeah. They're like, oh, cranberry, it's whatever. I'm like, oh, no.
No, you need
cranberry
that.
Is necessary.
So I think cranberry pie is something that I'd make this year, but in my family, my mom has made cranberry salad. It's essentially cranberries, apples, celery, and then you have cranberry jello.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the part I like at all, simply because it's way too sweet.
Yeah.
But it's kind of this little globby, shaky jello mass, you know?
That's fun, though. That's like a fun... You don't really get jello and celery very often.
No, you don't.
Get your veggies while you have your sugar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes it healthy.
Perfect.
Absolutely. All right. So we'll get to the interview today with St. Leo Food Connection director, Kevin Blackin-Coley. Take it away. So we're here today with the director of St. Leo Food Connection, Kevin Blackin-Coley. Kevin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So can you give us a little history about St. Leo Food Connection?
Certainly. We started as a traditional food bank in 1982 when there was a need for additional emergency food services in Tacoma's Hilltop neighborhood. And Over the years, we've grown as the need for food assistance has grown, and we now operate a variety of programs helping people who don't have enough resources to provide food every day for their families.
Very nice.
Thank you for that. So what does food insecurity look like in Pierce County?
Well, it's similar to what it looks like across the state and around the country. Food insecurity, very simply, is a fancy term demographers came up with to identify people who are not able to put three meals on their table every day of the month, whether that's throughout the month that they're not able to do that, or if it's that a question of being, as the month winds down and their resources have been depleted, they need to turn to emergency food services.
So I'm sure you're aware about food waste. Like, it's a big issue.
Huge.
Food that is considered unsellable, like the oddly shaped carrots or like blemished apples or things, they often end up as food waste from grocery stores. So how do you get food that's considered unsellable in grocery stores to food banks and then to people who really need it?
So we have a variety of ways that we do that. One is we partner through Food Lifeline, the grocery rescue program, where we're working with local grocery stores and other food purveyors like Costco and Grocery Outlet, Cash and Carry, to pick up from them donated food that is not going to be sellable for them, either because they have too much or it's not attractive enough, as you were saying.
Yeah.
We also work with a group called Harvest Pierce County, which is a program of the Pierce Conservation District, and they do more traditional farm gleaning, so they have relationships with the local farmers here in Pierce County, and if they have a crop that they're not going to be able to harvest in time or isn't going to be sellable, they arrange for volunteer groups to go. They also have a fruit tree harvest program that works with local homeowners. If you have a fruit tree, you can't use all the fruit, or because of age or physical limitations, you're not able to gather the fruit yourself. Volunteers will come out, harvest the fruit, share with the homeowner if that's necessary, share with the volunteers who were part of the program, and the rest goes to the nearest local food bank.
Nice. That's really cool.
And then they also harvest at farmers market. Same thing. Farmers bring too much food to sell at a given day on a market, and it's not going to last until the next market, then the gleaners glean it and bring it to local food banks. And so I think last year we rescued over 350,000 pounds of food.
Wow.
From local stores just on our own, and then the Harvest Pierce County did, I think, over 100,000 as well. And so that's food, as you were indicating, food that would normally wind up in a landfill, which is the worst possible place for food to wind up, because it leads to environmental problems, and it's much better to go into people's bellies.
Absolutely.
100%, yeah. So I was looking on your website, and I noticed that there's the children's feeding program that's listed.
Mm-hmm.
Could you actually talk a little bit more about how hunger affects children?
Because kids are developing, you know, up all the way through high school, developing physically and developing intellectually, they're really at a higher risk for poor nutrition-related issues, everything from they have more illnesses, they're more likely to have issues such as diabetes and others because cheaper food tends to be processed food. There was an interesting study that came out recently, I'm not sure who did it, but showed that as towards the end of the month, as SNAP benefits, which are what food stamps are called now, as those wind down at the end of the month, kids' attendance at school goes down.
Oh, wow.
So they're drawing a correlation between food being present and, you know, at the home. And it's not the question of where with my kids, if they say there's no food at home, it just meant that there was nothing they wanted to eat.
Yeah.
That was ready, then they didn't have to do any preparation work for. These were families where there's not enough food at the table. So we've been developing and expanding a variety of programs to kind of fit that gap. To begin with, 40% of the clients at our food bank are 18 and under. I mean, that doesn't mean they come to the food bank. It's usually their mom or dad who comes. But about 40% of the 137,000 client visits last year were kids under 18.
Wow.
We also do a backpack program where we send food home with kids on the weekend, and started very small, one school, 50 kids every week. And with the thanks of community support, we have expanded that. We're now sending food home with 1,100 kids every weekend during the school year, and send six meals, food that they can prepare themselves, plus plus fresh fruit and vegetables each week.
Nice.
So it's trying to make it as healthy as possible. And then in the summer, when we don't have that delivery system built in of the kids being at the school and we can bring them the food to take home, we do a summer meals program. And last year we served an average of about, depending on how much smoke was in the air, how hot it was,
mm-hmm.
when
sure.
it was raining, anywhere from 450 to 600 kids at sites around Tacoma and Lakewood.
Nice.
So this is really more becoming, I know, you know, we've talked about how this is for, you know, emergency food kind of thing, but this is more becoming do you see it becoming more of a staple kind of thing?
Because yeah, it is. A colleague of mine at another program refers to, we says we really should change our name from emergency food system to chronic food system.
Right.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But what we're seeing
that's what
is,
I'm hearing. Yeah.
Again, some people come all month long. Some people just come at the end of the month, but we have very many clients repeating. And there was a big spike after the 2008 economic collapse in Pierce County. Visits to hot meal sites and food banks increased between 2008 and 2014 by about 70%. And that was because, you know, when the bottom fell out, it affected people at the bottom more so than in the middle or the top. And while the economic recovery is supposedly occurring, our numbers, they're not increasing, but they haven't gone down. So people are still struggling, even though over half our households have an income, whether it's through a disability payment or government assistance mm-hmm. or they're working, but they still don't have enough money to pay utility, pay for transportation to work, and pay for mm-hmm. housing as well as food. So one of the things that the food programs look at is how we are helping people maintain stability, not just by providing healthy, nutritious food, but also helping them direct their additional resources to those other needs in their life.
So let's take a break and talk a little bit about Friday Flicks. Looking for fun and inspiring ways to connect with different charities in our program? The CFD has got you covered. Every Friday during the annual giving campaign, the Combined Fund Drive will release a special video highlighting one of our member charities and what they do for the community. The videos are filled with amazing stories of inspiring people who are helping those in need every day. Check out each video for special content and different ways to give. For all our videos, visit www.cfd.wa.gov/cfd/videos. And back to the show.
So in doing research for today's podcast, I saw that there was a Gallup poll in 2011 that was broken up into congressional districts. And at the time, Pierce County was part of District 6.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that 15% of households in Pierce County responded that they had experienced food hardship in the previous 12 months.
Yeah, so, and that's close to the national average. As you were saying earlier, the kind of numbers vary, but it's between 1 in 6 and 1 in 7 households have some issue at some point in the month with putting enough food on the table. And even with all the support of food banks and hot meal sites, there are still, Food Lifeline is the Washington State partner of America's Second Harvest.
Uh-huh.
And they did a study that showed, they call it the Missing Meals Report. They do it every 2 years. And they break it down by county. And in 2015, my numbers are going to be a little bit off, but there were still 1 million meals missing. For people, whether after they used all their resources, whether it's income or state assistance or federal assistance, and hot meal sites, there was still a gap. And as you mentioned earlier with food waste, it's not a question of there not being enough food available. It's
people
being able to afford it, have access to it, and the food not going to waste to begin with. So, you know, it's a lot of systems that need to work together to address it.
Absolutely.
Most definitely.
Well, and since this poll's come out, I mean, there's definitely been more information since 2011, but
right.
do you think that it's gotten better or it's gotten worse since then?
I think it's stayed relatively consistent since about 2014, so the numbers are probably a little bit worse than 2011.
Okay.
The Mercy Food Network, which is one of our partners in Pierce County, is a distributor of food to food banks and hot meal sites. Shows that the numbers have remained pretty consistent since 2014, but again, that was after that huge spike from between 2008 and 2014.
Yeah.
So, and things don't look like they're going to be getting any better as we move forward. Income inequality is increasing. I just heard a thing as I was driving into work today, listening to the radio, that in America, the three richest people, two of whom live in Washington, Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos, have more wealth than the bottom 50% of the country.
That's crazy.
And 5 years ago, it was the top 200 had as much as the bottom 50%. Mm-hmm. So that gap is increasing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So someone that hears this podcast and they want to give to you guys, right?
You know, one of the great things about the combined fund drive is that it allows people to make that decision once and say, you know, I'm going to make this commitment. And it also allows them to spread it out. A lot of people, I know for most of my donations, I can't afford to give $250 at one time, but I can afford to give $20 or $25 a month. And so I love those monthly payroll deduction options because I just don't think of it as, I don't have to think about it every month.
Absolutely.
So people can do that, and they can target the money. If they want to do it just specifically for the backpack program, they can list that, and those funds get tracked for that. Or they can just put it to general operations, and that includes everything from keeping the lights on to food purchase to vehicle maintenance to go pick up the food. So we're happy wherever they are to give to their local food bank. And
good.
If they're in Pierce County, we'd like them to give to us.
When someone donates $5, what does that $5 do for
$5 for instance would provide enough food for 6 meals and snacks, including fresh fruits and vegetables, for a child over the weekend.
That's amazing.
That covers the food purchase and the staff cost. We estimate that it costs $20 a month to provide a family. When they come once a week, they can get 3 meals a day, enough food for 3 meals for 3 days.
Is that like a family of four, or like what kind of family size?
Well, so in their family of four, yeah.
Okay.
Kind of use that as our base. So a $20 donation will provide a family of four with access to the food bank once a week throughout the month. It may not be the same family, but
sure.
Folks, you know, sometimes they come 1 week and not the next. And that doesn't necessarily, one of the things, it doesn't necessarily turn it into money directly. As I mentioned earlier, it turns it into gas for the trucks and electricity for the lights, as well as for direct food costs. But it enables us, that's the only way that we keep our doors open, is by having support from the community.
Very nice.
Well, thank you so much, Kevin, for speaking with us today on this. And I really appreciate
My pleasure. Thanks for helping us get out the word. And then just thanks for the work that the Combined Fund Drive does, not just for us, but for programs throughout Pierce County, throughout the state. It's great that you provide an avenue for folks to give back to their community in as easy and convenient a way as possible. And we're grateful for the support that we get every quarter in terms of from the folks who've pledged us over the year. And I want to thank you for making that possible.
Absolutely. Thank you for being part of the program.
My pleasure. You know, we it's never hard for us to join with a program where they're giving us support.
Very nice.
All right, so we just ended up talking with Kevin Glackenkolle. He is the director with the St. Leo Food Connection.
It was awesome.
I know, right?
Yeah, he had so much great information. And, well, it's kind of one of those things that's like, wow, you're so informative and you're giving all this information. When he was talking about the 1 in 6, 1 in 7, depending on the survey of households that had food insecurity. And it's like, wow, it's great information. At the same time, you're like, wow, 1 in 6
households
have
around.
Food insecurity.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just.
You've got 6 neighbors.
Yeah, exactly. Look at your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Someone that you know.
Yeah.
Has food insecurity.
They're
and I think
struggling
that's like the sad part of getting good information sometimes is those down things. But I mean, the information that Kevin gave and just talking about how St. Leo Food Connections and the programs that they provide is really incredible.
It's funny too, because like I find that the more we talk to charities in the program who, you know, we've got charities who work with animals, who work with medical assistants, who work with food, right? So the more we talk to charities, the more I find that they all kind of have similar programs, but there's definitely a need for those programs.
Yeah.
Like, they have a backpack program.
Mm-hmm.
They have a program for kids to eat during the summer. Like, they wouldn't have these programs if there wasn't a need for them.
Well, exactly. And I think what is really, really interesting, too, is when we're talking about maintaining, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maintaining, you know, from that 2011 to 2014, he even said, you know, it hasn't, you know, gotten in a sense better. Yeah. You know, there's still people coming in, and whether it's every single month or every week or just during the summer times or just during certain times of the year, you can tell, like what he was saying, it's no longer for emergency food. It's a chronic issue.
Yeah.
And we don't just see that in Pierce County where they are, but we also are seeing it across Washington. How many different organizations we've met that deal with food or food insecurity or just those resources for that continuously say, this isn't a thing that's going away.
Yeah.
And I think all of us need to take that realization in, and we need to do something about that.
Yeah, and then being more responsible about the things that you buy and how you...
Food waste.
Like, you waste food in your own homes. Mm-hmm. Being really conscientious about it.
I think it's really cool that these St. Leo has started working with food... the farmers markets and
grocery stores
mm-hmm. and working together, because that's really what a community is about, right?
Yeah.
Each of them in Pierce County are recognizing, whether it's, you know, students in Tacoma or Clover Park or different things like that, they recognize, like, we can help each other locally. And I think it's so important to look, like, yes, there's many state programs and federal programs out there, like he was mentioning SNAP, but look at what this local community is doing that is also assisting, that's really making a huge impact in Pierce County.
Yeah.
I mean, if you didn't have these resources for Pierce County, like if if St. Leo was gone, those families would be worse off.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and it's so amazing that there's this resource for them, and I think the products that they provide are so important to that community.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It makes them thrive and grow.
Yes.
So, we, as the CFD, we're kind of in a pattern where we are in campaign mode and we don't have a ton of actual CFD events.
Mm-hmm.
So, the only upcoming things beyond just, hey, it's holiday time, the last week to give.
Oh, yeah.
The last week to give is December 4th through 8th.
Yep.
So, that's when we're asking all our volunteers to wrap up those fundraisers they've been having throughout the campaign and get them sent over to us. It's kind of crazy to think that we just got through a disbursement to charities and we're about ready to disperse more money to them from all these fundraisers. So.
Exactly. And I'm going to do two shout-outs, one on Friday Flicks. It actually just went out this past Monday on the 20th. It is actually with the Thurston County Food Bank. It was a video that we actually did last year with Every Monday Matters. It was this really cool thing of why giving matters.
Yeah.
And since we're talking about food security today, this is one of those other organizations that really can help do that. So don't forget about Friday Flicks. And my second thing is I want to say thank you, everyone that's listening to Podcasts for Good. Seriously, it really helps us know that we're helping our community and helping get these charities' voices out there.
Yeah.
Without you and you know, this wouldn't be possible. So thank you so much. And thank you for subscribing and tell your coworkers, tell your friends. I told my mom we listen together. True. It's a fact. Especially that Halloween podcast.
Nice.
It was too funny not to, but really.
Did you hold hands while you listened?
No, we just giggled and moved furniture, but.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Getting ready for Thanksgiving. So,
naturally.
Yeah, but really thank you guys, everyone, for subscribing and tell people about it. We really want to make sure that we're doing what's right, and we'd love to hear feedback. So thank you again.
You're adorable, Jerrica.
I know. I try.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Hope you have a happy and safe Thanksgiving.